created to keep alive memories of the ship over a century after its ill-fated maiden voyage. The full-scale replica will soon be open to the public. It's part of a theme park in Sichuan Province, southwest China. The construction work started 6 years ago, involving over 100 workers. Around 23,000 tons of steel has been used to build a ship, which is 260 meters long. Designers hope that it will attract up to 5 million visitors a year.
The ship is located in the west part of China. It will attract tourists from the world. We estimate that the number of visitors will be between 2 million to 5 million in a year. This tourist volume should guarantee the return of our investment.
Everything in the duplication, from its cabins to the doorknobs, is identical to the original Titanic. Spending one night on the five-star ship costs around $150. The original luxury vessel sank in April 1912 after hitting an iceberg. Over 1,500 people died in the accident.
Animals living in the Paris Zoological Park will soon be able to see visitors again after months of just interacting with zookeepers due to COVID-19 restrictions. The zoo is preparing to reopen next week with limited numbers of visitors and obligatory health protocols. During the shutdown, the park welcomed over 60 new babies, including baboons, penguins and flamingos. Experts believe the reopening will reawaken animals' curiosity.
Seeing public again will reawaken the animals' curiosity. They also look at the visitors. Some are very interested. You'll see the seals when they're with small children. It's part of enriching their environment to see a little bit of people, of diversity. So it's good for everyone.
The park, which temporarily closed last October, houses 2,500 animals of 234 species. France is now easing its COVID-19 restrictions and plans to reopen museums, zoos, shops and cinemas on May the 19th. Looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawnmowers? Chip may be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawnmowers. The project includes 25 sheep of four different breeds. They are going to graze on a one-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
Using unusual array of tools for a haircut, that's what a Pakistani barber does to rise above the competition. Ali Abbas lives in the city of Lahore, eastern Pakistan. He uses blowtorches, meat cleavers and even broken glass to do a cut. He typically begins a haircut with a blowtorch to take a bit off the top. He then uses a cleaver and butcher's block and sometimes broken glass to cut the lower layers. His style is proving to be a hit.
This idea was not a joke. One day I was thinking of doing something different. It was my desire to do something in a different way. Since I started this, my customers have increased. People's confidence has been boosted. When you're visible on a platform and people see you, people will say, "We must try this. We should try this."
Abbas has been using this style since 2016. He says he has received a very good response from his clients. His peculiar approach has also resulted in TV appearances and fashion shoots. It's not an everyday scene for Londoners to see a whale swimming in the River Thames, but over the weekend, the city witnessed a small whale being rescued after it got stuck along the river. The baby whale was first spotted in the evening, becoming stranded on the Lock's boat rollers in Richmond. Rescuers worked during the night to free the 4-meter-long whale. After 4 hours, the injured animal was successfully moved to a safer location. A vet is now monitoring its situation to make sure it's healthy enough to be released back to the ocean.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. A North Carolina district attorney on Tuesday said police officers were justified in the fatal shooting of Andrew Brown Jr., a black man, in April, and that the sheriff's deputies who fired will not face charges for killing the 42-year-old father of seven. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Amanda Holbridge. The piece is titled, Andrew Brown Shooting, Officers Will Not Face Charges, Says District Attorney. Stay with us for more of Amanda Holbridge's article. North Carolina District Attorney on Tuesday said police officers were justified in the fatal shooting of Andrew Brown Jr., a black man, in April, and that the sheriff's deputies who fired will not face charges for killing the 42-year-old father of seven. Andrew Womble, the district attorney, said, Andrew Brown Jr.'s death, whilst tragic, was justified because three deputies reasonably believed deadly force was necessary to protect themselves and others while serving a warrant for Andrew Brown's arrest on felony drug charges. The prosecutor said deputies in full tactical gear blocked Andrew Brown in the driveway outside his Elizabeth City home to serve the warrant on 21st of April. Andrew Brown Jr. ignored orders to get out of the car and struck a deputy twice while trying to escape, Andrew Womble said. The district attorney, Andrew Womble, described the encounter from the time police left their vehicles to when they removed Andrew Brown Jr. from his car after shooting him as lasting 44 seconds. Andrew Brown Jr.'s death certificate said he died as a result of gunshot wounds to his head. Andrew Brown's family commissioned an independent autopsy, which specified that he was shot 5 times, once to the back of his head. The district attorney, Andrew Womble, said he would not release body camera video of the confrontation, for which Andrew Brown Jr.'s family and supporters have repeatedly called to ensure integrity in the investigation of his death. In the press conference, which was broadcast on major U.S. national news outlets, officials shared portions of the video footage. Andrew Brown Jr.'s family and lawyers had previously seen a 20-second clip of body camera footage and said it showed police officers firing at Andrew Brown's car as he drove away. Under North Carolina law, law enforcement can set up a viewing of video footage for specific individuals, but a court order is required to release a copy of the video recording. Superior Court Judge Jeffrey Foster denied a petition by several media outlets to release the body cam footage earlier this month. The decision could be considered after the state's investigation is complete. Meanwhile, protests demanding greater accountability in the criminal justice system followed the shooting of Andrew Brown Jr., and in the wake of Tuesday's announcement, people again called for the full body cam video footage to be released. 3 deputies who fired their weapons during the incident remained on leave. Investigator Daniel Meads, Deputy Robert Morgan, and Corporal Aaron Llewellyn. The sheriff's office said Robert Morgan is black, Daniel Meads and Aaron Llewellyn are white. 4 others involved in the incident have returned to active duty. District Attorney Andrew Womble said he would not be filing criminal charges against any of the deputies. Meanwhile, the FBI has launched a civil rights investigation of the shooting incident. Family and friends told reporters that Andrew Brown Jr. had an easy smile, was quick to crack a joke, and was determined to give his children a better life than he had. His cousin, Jadeen Hampton, told the Associated Press last month, "Everybody would just wait to hear him tell a story because it would be like a comedian telling the play-by-play about something that happened." According to Andrew Brown Jr.'s family and friends, he had an easy smile which belied hardship, loss and troubles with the law, was memorable for his dimples, his relative said. He was quick to crack a joke at family gatherings. He tried not to miss after losing both of his parents. He encouraged his children to make good grades even though he dropped out of high school himself. Above all, he was determined to give his children a better life than he had. The 42-year-old Andrew Brown Jr. from Elizabeth City, North Carolina, was shot to death by a deputy sheriff trying to serve a search warrant. An eyewitness said Andrew Brown Jr. tried to drive away but was shot dead in his car.
The Israeli regime continues with its airstrikes and artillery attacks on different parts of the Gaza Strip more than 1 week after it began its aggression against the territory. Israeli warplanes fired many missiles overnight into the different parts of the densely populated area. So far, more than 200 Gazans have been killed, scores of them children. More than 1,200 people have also been injured. Government buildings, factories, residential areas, and even media headquarters have not been spared either. In retaliation, Palestinian resistance groups have launched rocket attacks on Israel. Hamas's military wing said its rockets hit Israeli settlements in Ashdod, injuring several people. The Azadin al-Qassam brigades also hit the city of Nevitot, as well as a number of military bases. An Israeli battleship was also hit by Palestinian rockets off the shore of the Gaza Strip. The Islamic Jihad movement also said its military wing, Al-Quds brigades, fired a barrage of rockets into the cities of Sdrot and Nevitot. So far, 10 Israelis have been killed and hundreds injured by Palestinian rocket fire. The continuation of the Israeli aggression comes as Palestinians have called for more concrete actions from the international community against Israel. Prime Minister Mohammed Shatayyeh said mere condemnations are not enough anymore. He demanded the United Nations issue a resolution condemning Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. Shatayyeh said Israel's crime have to be punished under international law.
The Israeli crimes against Palestinians, which we are particularly seeing again in the current assault in Gaza, represents a long pattern of what many have understood as crimes against humanity. And it is a long pattern of Israeli policy that started with the Nakba in 1948 to basically cleanse the land of historic Palestine of its indigenous inhabitants. So I see the current assault on Gaza as a continuation of that policy, and I see it in the context of a very aggressive settler colonial enterprise.
The Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip comes as the regime enjoys unconditional support from its Western allies, namely the United States and European governments. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas is to blame for the situation. Blinken said he is sorry about the Palestinian loss of lives, but insisted that Israel is entitled to defend itself. Many construe Blinken's remarks as a green light for Israel to commit war crimes.
The West support for Israel has been implacably solid for decades for a variety of reasons, because Israel plays an important part of foreign policy, the U.S. representative in the Middle East. It's been framed as, you know, the bulwark against terrorism. I think that that's starting to crack. As there are more voices of dissent, there are voices of dissent in the Congress, there's much more awareness on social media. So I am hoping that we're beginning to see the end of that mountain of support and a recognition of Palestinian rights and their need for their human rights and their ability to live a life with dignity and safety and opportunity.
Germany also supported Israel's attacks on Gaza. Separately, German Chancellor Angela Merkel condemned Palestinian rocket attacks in a phone call with the Israeli Prime Minister and expressed solidarity with the regime. Apart from what was said above, a UN Security Council session on the Israeli-Palestinian escalation failed to bring Tel Aviv to account for its all-out aggression. But the West's support for the regime in Tel Aviv comes as Israel has an obligation to provide for the protection, security, and welfare of the people living under its occupation, though the regime hasn't done that so far. This highlights the fact as to why the United States insists with what it calls peace process between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
The Israeli-Palestinian peace process died a long time ago, so this is just another nail in the coffin. So I think that the peace process doesn't exist. And a peace process requires negotiations between parties that are equally respected, that the more powerful party has to recognize the trauma of the weaker party. There has to be apologies and reparations and a much more understanding of the historical accuracy.
Prominent rights group Amnesty International has blasted Israel for bombing Gaza, saying the attack must be investigated as a war crime. It noted that the strike fit a pattern of Israel's collective punishment of Palestinians. Also, Reporters Without Borders slandered deliberate bombing of a media building as a war crime, accusing Israel of trying to obstruct media coverage of its deadly attacks on the Gaza Strip. The U.S. approval of weapons sales to Israel, worth $735 million, is yet another proof of Western double standards regarding the issue of human rights. Many observers, even in the West, believe that the Western governments, most notably the U.S., use the issue of human rights and democracy as a leverage to advance their geopolitical agenda in different parts of the world, including in the Middle East.
Tensions in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank escalated after Israel launched a heavy-handed crackdown on worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the holy month of Ramadan. The Israeli military pounded areas in the Gaza Strip, killing and injuring hundreds of civilians, among them women and children. But unlike the regime's other military campaigns against Gaza, Palestinian resistance groups responded forcefully to the aggression, launching a barrage of missiles and drones and inflicting heavy damage and casualties on the enemy. A top Israeli general has acknowledged the rising missile power of the Palestinian resistance groups, saying the Israeli regime is now faced with, quote, the highest ever rate of rocket attacks. In a press conference on Sunday, Major General Ori Gordon said Palestinian resistance groups based in Gaza had fired around 3,000 rockets toward the occupied territories over the past several days, surpassing the pace seen during an escalation in 2019 and the 2006 war with Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance group. In the meantime, violence has erupted across Israeli cities, with clashes between members of the Arab and Jewish communities increasing over the past week.
The violence within 48 Palestine alongside the resistance efforts from Palestinians all over Palestine is putting the Israeli regime in an unprecedented situation. Most of all, these developments display the weakness of the Israeli colonial project as such, and are also a danger for Israel's so-called security. Security, of course, meaning in the Israeli context, the successful continuation of the apartheid regime within 48 Palestine and the military occupation beyond. And the Palestinians in 48 Palestine have at best been second-class citizens. So, and Israel has used them for propaganda efforts to portray itself internationally as an alleged democracy with coexistence. And so this image is currently crumbling to some extent.
Also, the damage Israel is facing is thought to be much more severe when the economic impact of the incursion on Gaza is factored in. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations have been held in several cities around the world in the past few days, with protesters decrying the raids on the densely populated Gaza Strip. Protesters in the United States called for an immediate halt to all funds Washington provides to the regime. Calls for an end to the attacks were echoed by the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
The current hostilities are utterly appalling. This latest round of violence only perpetuates the cycles of death, destruction, and despair, and pushes farther to the horizon any hopes of coexistence and peace. Fighting must stop. It must stop immediately.
Analysts say the Israeli army's attacks on the Gaza Strip on the one hand, and the raging conflict in the occupied West Bank on the other, will prove costly for the regime and will especially undermine its post-COVID-19 pandemic economic recovery.
The current events and the manifold proclamations of solidarity with Palestinians worldwide might actually have serious implications for Israel and for its economy. But it also needs to be seen how the situation will develop, because after all, it is the significant support of the United States, Germany, and the European Union that has kept Israel's economy and, of course, its oppressive apartheid regime alive.
Israel's closest ally, the United States, is also coming under fire for refusing to take a firm stance against the crimes being committed against the people of Palestine and blocking the United Nations Security Council meeting and statement on the issue. The international community's condemnation, together with the ramifications of the attacks on social unrest in the Israeli cities, would have bad optics for Israel, which is already grappling with political uncertainty amid the lack of a coalition cabinet.
On May 15, 1948, the regime forced some 750,000 Palestinians to leave their homes and villages and expelled them into refugee camps that still exist in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Armed forces massacred entire villages of men, women, and even children. That pushed rightful owners of Palestine to leave their homes and lands as they feared losing their lives. Consequently, that provided the ground for Zionists to establish the Israeli regime. The Palestinians were to suffer further when the West Bank and Gaza fell to the Israelis during the Six-Day War in 1967. Millions of Palestinians, including those displaced since 1948, found themselves under military occupation as well as further Israeli expansionism in their lands. In 2020, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unveiled his intention to annex the occupied West Bank with the support of the United States. The move is widely condemned as it is considered illegal and in defiance of international law. For many Palestinians, that is just the last chapter in a process that has started with the initial loss of their lands in 1948. More than 600,000 Israelis currently live in over 230 settlements built since the 1967 Israeli occupation of the West Bank and East Jerusalem Al-Quds. That's while all Israeli settlement activities are illegal under international law. Every year, Palestinians reaffirm their right to return to their homes and villages in historic Palestine on Nakba Day. They hold annual rallies to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their homeland by the regime to establish what's known today as Israel. This year, Palestinians and their supporters across the globe mark the day amid Israel's deadly aggression against Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
The Israeli government is taking more land in the West Bank. More than two-thirds of the West Bank has been swallowed by the Israeli settlements. And every day they are also taking more land in Jerusalem. As we have seen in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, they are kicking Palestinians out of their hands, of their homes and lands in order to replace them with Israeli, with Jewish settlers. It will continue because the Palestinians are not willing to surrender to the Israeli to the Israeli policies of ethnic cleansing.
In a pre-dawn airstrike, Israeli warplanes attacked Al-Shati refugee camp in western Gaza on Saturday. 8 children and 2 women were killed while 15 others were injured. Following that, Hamas's military wing, the Zeddin al-Qassam Brigades, said it has fired tens of rockets at Tel Aviv and Ashdod in retaliation for Israel's attacks on the Gaza Strip. The Zeddin al-Qassam Brigades also said they launched drone and mortar attacks on Israel's Kisafim military base. The group has announced it is prepared to bomb Tel Aviv for 6 months in a row. Hamas has recently stepped up attacks on Israel in response to the regime's aggression on the besieged territory. Israel's Ramon Airport, as well as cities of Ashkelon and Ashdod, have also come under missile attacks in the past few days. On Saturday afternoon, the Israeli regime also flattened the 11-story Al Jala building that housed the offices of Al Jazeera and the Associated Press News Agency. Press freedom advocates sharply condemned the move, calling it a brazen attempt to silence journalists covering the Israeli military's ongoing offensive that has killed scores of people.
They will continue to do so because they are launching a war against not only the Palestinian people but also against the media that is showing the real Israeli face and real Israeli violations of human rights.
targeting the media organizations and journalists in Israeli military offensives in the Gaza Strip isn't an accident. This is systematic targeting of media in Gaza in order to prevent reporting from there and to create a cloak of secrecy around Israeli crimes.
Gaza and the other Palestinian territories have been simmering with anger over Israel's stepped-up land grab policies in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds, as well as the regime's desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, one of the holiest sites in Islam. Days after the regime launched a heavy-handed crackdown on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the holy fasting month of Ramadan, tensions spiraled into a broader conflict between Gaza and Israel. Since last Monday, the Israeli military has been launching large-scale airstrikes against Gaza, razing many homes and civilian infrastructure to the ground. The regime's artillery and tanks have also been targeting the blockaded coastal enclave, killing and injuring scores of people, including women and children. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance groups have been responding to Israel's acts of aggression with massive barrages of rockets and missiles. They have also brought drones into the equation. Much to Israel's surprise, rocket launches have largely overwhelmed the regime's anti-missile system, dubbed the Iron Dome, and hit several cities across the occupied territories, leaving several dead and dozens of others injured.
So, of course, the Zionists have always believed that they have been protected behind what they called an Iron Dome, that missile defense shield that they believed would defend them from all attacks either from Palestinian resistance forces or from the wider Arab and Islamic world such as Syria, Lebanon, and Iran. Now, we have seen, of course, that this Iron Dome is more like an iron sieve nowadays because the amount of missiles, hundreds and hundreds of missiles that have gotten through and have landed, some of them in strategic places such as cities near the Gaza Strip or near Ben Gurion Airport in the occupied in Zionist city of Tel Aviv.
Meanwhile, the regime in Tel Aviv has been under criticism worldwide, with many supporters of the Palestinian cause in Muslim countries and elsewhere holding rallies in solidarity with the Palestinians. As the exchange of fire between the Israeli army and the resistance groups continue, the tensions in the occupied West Bank has reached a fever pitch. So far, several incidents have been recorded where mobs of settlers raided and vandalized Palestinian shops or attacked Palestinian Arabs there.
They are so high up in the clouds, let's say, of their own superiority, of their own master race status, let's say, in the region, that they don't really believe in the possibility of resistance in the region really making a dent in the Zionist armor. And what we have seen now is that there is way more than a dent in the armor. The Palestinians have broken through this armor.
While the Israeli attacks on Palestinians have been met with international condemnation, the United States has stopped short of denouncing the regime's crimes. Washington blocked a UN Security Council meeting on the Palestinian situation and prevented the world body from releasing a statement on the issue, saying that such a move would not be helpful to de-escalation talks with the two sides. Washington's support for the regime has sparked an outcry inside the United States, too. Several Democratic members of the U.S. Congress have lashed out at the regime and slammed the United States' unconditional support for it.
We must condition aid to Israel on compliance with international human rights and end the apartheid. We must, with no hesitation, demand that our country recognize the unconditional support of Israel has enabled the erasure of Palestinian life and the denial of the rights of millions of refugees.
As Israel ramps up its attacks on the people of Palestine, such calls for its boycott are growing stronger. But how many more lives should be lost before the voices are heard?
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
It was bad enough when Palestinians in Gaza weren't able to get vaccinated, but now to reportedly lose their only coronavirus testing lab is beyond words. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jake Johnson Ryder. This article is published under the heading A Heinous Crime: Israeli regime's airstrikes damage Gaza's only coronavirus testing lab. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. The Zionist regime's airstrikes in the center of the occupied Gaza Strip recently caused severe damage to the territory's lone coronavirus testing lab and the offices of the Palestinian Ministry of Health, an attack that was immediately condemned as a war crime. Citing eyewitnesses to the bombing, Middle East Eye reported that the Zionist regime warplanes hit the six-story Azi al-Shawa building with at least three missiles, completely destroying the upper floors. MEE noted that the bombing damaged dozens of adjacent buildings, including Gaza's main coronavirus lab, an orphanage, a female high school, and the Palestinian Ministry of Health offices. If the Ministry of Health is not safe, then there is no safe place in the Gaza Strip, said Abu Hamed Abu Fall, an eyewitness to the airstrikes. This is a war crime, and the world cannot remain silent. Speaking in front of the impacted buildings recently, Dr. Yusuf Abu Rish the Undersecretary of Gaza's Health Ministry, said the Zionist regime attack rendered the testing facility inoperable, badly wounded several health workers, and disrupted the territory's ability to administer COVID-19 vaccines, compounding the difficulties caused by the Zionist regime's blockade. Targeting the Ministry of Health building, Al-Ramal Clinic, and the medical staff is a heinous crime aimed at preventing the ministry from continuing its humanitarian work in saving the lives of the wounded and providing health care to citizens, Al-Rish said. The international community must hold the occupation accountable for its heinous and ongoing crimes against medical personnel and health institutions. Horrifying, MSNBC's Mehdi Hassan tweeted in response to the bombing. It was bad enough when Palestinians in Gaza weren't able to get vaccinated, but now to reportedly lose their only coronavirus testing lab is beyond words. The Zionist regime's airstrikes came shortly after Israeli bombs killed two of Gaza's senior doctors, including one of the officials leading the besieged territory's response to the coronavirus pandemic. As the Washington Post reported recently, the Zionist regime's latest assault, which has thus far killed more than 200 people and injured at least 1,300 people in the occupied coastal strip, began as coronavirus infections and deaths in Gaza had started to decline after reaching record highs in April. The violence has had an immediate effect. Medical facilities, triaging the flood of new injuries, have for the most part paused coronavirus testing and vaccinations, the Post noted. And a crop of hospitalized COVID-19 patients who were nearing recovery were released over the past 2 days to make room for the growing number of war wounded. A wave of Zionist regime airstrikes in Gaza City that killed 42 people also damaged Medicine Sans Frontieres, MSF clinic that treats trauma and burn wounds, prompting outrage from the organization's staff. Eli Sok, MSF's head of mission for occupied Palestinian territories, said in a statement recently that the horrendous attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure that we are witnessing in Gaza are inexcusable and intolerable. The number of wounded and displaced people is mounting, while additional humanitarian personnel and supplies still cannot enter Gaza, said Sok. The local health authority is reporting being 24 hours away from running out of blood bags, meaning they cannot transfuse patients with blood, a key intervention in caring for war wounded. Israel's needs to stop these attacks in the heart of Gaza, as we have seen time and again, that they kill civilians no matter how targeted they are. As in such a densely populated place, it is not possible to limit the effects of the bombing, Sok continued. Safe access for humanitarian staff and supplies also needs to be urgently arranged.
Around the World with Reporters.
Palestinians have staged a nationwide general strike across the occupied West Bank and in historic Palestine, the lands occupied in 1948, to protest the ongoing Israeli bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip. The strike has led to the suspension of all economic activities and the closure of educational institutions across the occupied West Bank. Shops and private institutions in Palestinian areas in historic Palestine also closed down. Meanwhile, thousands of Palestinians took to the streets in Ramallah to support the strike.
لن نقبل.
We won't tolerate the continuation of the occupation. It must end. The Israeli regime carries out the ugliest practices against our people wherever they are, and then there are the settlers' ongoing violence, and now there are these airstrikes that are killing children and innocent people.
Protesters from all walks of life and of all ages participated in the rally that headed to the northern entrance of the city where Israeli military checkpoint and illegal settlement of Beit Il are located. The protesters held Palestinian flag and chanted anti-Israeli slogans in solidarity with the resistance in the Gaza Strip.
Today, we are rising against Israel's airstrikes on the Gaza Strip and its general operation against Palestinians here in the West Bank.
We are protesting against the ongoing violence against us, the Palestinians, and also to show support for the resistance in Gaza.
The rally, meanwhile, turned violent, with the Israeli soldiers at the checkpoint firing live ammunition.
Palestinians in the occupied territories and historic Palestine have united with a general strike and a day of rage to send in numerous messages. On the top, an expression of anger against this barbaric aggression by the Israeli occupation. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
It was billed as an emergency meeting of EU foreign affairs ministers to discuss the deadly violence in the Middle East. In fact, critics of Israel call it an illegal and merciless bombardment of Palestinians rather than a conflict. The ministers couldn't decide on anything concrete, and so the 27-nation bloc's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, ended up playing the event down.
In an informal meeting, there is no formal conclusions. And what I am going to explain you is my takeaway, my intellectual takeaway from the today meeting.
That takeaway basically consisted of merely calling for peace and for Israel's actions to be proportionate. Rights groups insist what's needed instead is for the EU to slap sanctions on Tel Aviv.
EU, especially if they are true and faithful to their own commitment for human rights protection, there is a time that they have to reflect on these issues. And I think also the pressure coming from civil society is playing a very important role.
But as Palestinians continue to suffer, perhaps Israel's influence in the West is too strong. The White House says the US will continue to provide $3.8 billion in military aid to Israel each year, claiming the regime has a right to defend itself.
The United States cannot continue to act alone and try to impose on all of us, including the European Union, their ideas. They have to engage everyone as we engage in the United Nations.
A large number of EU lawmakers have issued statements condemning Israel's actions. Some of these statements have been strongly worded. They insist Israel is guilty of genocide and ethnic cleansing. The MEPs are calling on the EU to suspend its substantial trade with Israel until such time as Tel Aviv stops breaking international laws. EU legislators are due to hold a number of debates on the crisis this week. The big question is, what difference will they make when it comes to the powers that be? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has concluded his visit to Italy, where he held consultations on the enhancement of mutual cooperation and bilateral ties. On Monday, Iran's top diplomat met with his Italian counterpart, Luigi Di Maio, with whom he talked about political, economic, and cultural aspects in view of the historical relations between Iran and Italy. This year marks the 160th anniversary of formal diplomatic relations between the two countries. Issues related to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the ongoing nuclear talks were also on the table.
Italy's position with regard to the nuclear deal is that of waiting to see what might happen. Rome doesn't have an autonomous policy of its own on a number of crucial international issues and is waiting for the US to make a move.
The talks between the two ministers revolved around Italy's posture on the nuclear deal. Years ago, under a Berlusconi government, Rome had the opportunity to play a leading role in the build-up process of the deal, but the role went to Germany in the end. Today, Tehran is assessing whether Italy aims to play a greater role in the revival of the JCPOA.
Also on Monday, Zarif met with the leader of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, who presented him with a gift that, the pontiff said, was a symbol of peace with an olive branch and a dove. The Vatican provided no comment on the content of the talks.
During his trip to Europe, the Iranian foreign minister was expected to visit Austria, where Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal are holding talks to find a way to revive the international accord. But the visit was cancelled after Vienna's decision to show solidarity with Israel by flying the regime's flag over government office buildings.
Italy has been quite careless on the Israeli-Palestinian crisis over the past years. Rome once held a position of equal closeness with the parts involved in the conflict, not one of equidistance like it is now. Italy was once very attentive to the needs of the Palestinians, whilst today its stance doesn't help finding a solution to the crisis for which Israel bears grave responsibilities.
On Tuesday, on his final day in Rome, Zarif met with a delegation of lawmakers from the Italian Parliament at the Iranian ambassador's residence, Max Civili, Rome.
Free at last. Emerging from the gloom of a four-month COVID-19 lockdown, most Britons are now free to hug, albeit cautiously, visit their pub, sit down to an indoor meal, or visit the cinema. Freedom beckons once more. There is excitement.
I'm happy that I could go to the movies again, you know, because it's just been like you're running out of things to do.
We've just had a lovely lunch, first time in all those months inside a restaurant. It felt good.
But beside the euphoria, there is also anxiety, the emergence of the Indian variant of COVID-19.
I'm told that if it's only marginally more transmissible, we can continue more or less as planned. But if the variant is significantly more transmissible, we're likely to face some hard choices. Thank you very much.
Perhaps the toughest of those choices, another lockdown. Some scientists, among them the government's chief medical officer, have warned of a summer surge in cases.
All the modeling suggests there is going to be a further surge, and that will find the people who either have not been vaccinated or where the vaccine's not worked.
So far, nearly 70% of Britons over the age of 18 have been offered their first dose of the vaccine, with the government saying the country is in a race between the vaccination program and the virus, especially the new variant first found in India. It's been surging in several areas across England.
So will there be another lockdown? Boris Johnson has called the lockdown roadmap cautious but irreversible. And last month, he came under fire for allegedly saying, let the bodies pile on high in their thousands, after reluctantly approving a second England-wide lockdown late last year.
It'd be obviously disappointing, but I would say not entirely unexpected, to be honest.
Steps need to be taken to deal with it. And if that means additional vaccination surges in areas where it exists, or local lockdowns, or nationwide, or travel restrictions, then my belief is that those should be brought in.
The UK's official death toll is nearly 128,000, Europe's highest figure and the world's fifth largest, after the United States, Brazil, India, and Mexico. And the possible outbreak of the Indian variant is sure to upset the Johnson government's roadmap out of lockdown. Saeed Puriza, London.
The families of the victims of the recent deadly attack near a school in Kabul call for proper attention to be paid to those affected by the incident. The families put the casualties at 90 deaths and over 240 wounded, all students. They also called on the international community, the UN and human rights bodies to probe the brutal attack. Referring to repeated targeting of Shia people by terrorist groups in Afghanistan, they also urged the international bodies to officially confirm the systematic genocide of Shia people in the country.
The attack on Sayyid al-Shuhada school came after a series of targeted attacks on Shia religious sites, educational centers, and sports clubs. It's a genocide, and we want the government and international bodies to officially confirm Shia genocide in Afghanistan.
But as observers say, it seems that neither terrorist attacks nor political obstacles can push back the determined young generation of Afghanistan as they are fully committed to go forward in order to build their own country by relying on knowledge instead of war and violence.
The government has not yet fulfilled its obligation to protect us. The recent attack on innocent schoolgirls was a big tragedy, and such incidents must be stopped in the future. The enemy must know that we will go forward despite the challenges.
It was in the afternoon of May 8 when three back-to-back blasts rocked western Kabul, and many fasting residents of the area witnessed how dozens of schoolgirls were hit by these blasts. Although the Taliban has denied any involvement in the attack, but none of other terrorist groups, including Daesh, has claimed responsibility too.
Afghanistan's Independent Human Rights Commission has emphasized on the need for a practical step from the government. President Ghani has already ordered a thorough probe into the attack and has called on his government to work on a plan to boost the security in Kabul. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Thousands of Yemenis headed to the streets of Yemen's capital Sana'a to express solidarity with the Palestinians on the Gaza Strip facing the Israeli relentless lethal bombing campaigns.
The Yemeni people have shown that the issue of Palestine is their red line. They have always voiced their support for the Palestinian cause. The Yemenis believe that Palestine is a sacred land and the occupation must come to an end at any cost. Yemenis crave for jihad in Palestine, even though Yemen is subjected to a brutal war for 7 years now.
Protesters blame the U.S. as complicit in the Israeli war crimes against the women and the children of the besieged Gaza Strip. They urge the Palestinian resistance groups to carry out further retaliatory rocket attacks against Israel.
Yemen's stance has been renewed along with the growing strength of Palestinian resistance in the Gaza. The massive march confirmed that the Yemenis stand by our side against the Israeli occupation. We salute the Yemeni people for their steadfast support despite being involved in a deadly war and siege for years.
Yemenis have also lambasted countries, some Arab states, for normalizing their relations with Israel. They said it is a great betrayal to all Muslims around the world.
It is clear that the normalization of relations with Israel is aimed at obtaining the praise of America and Israel. But the aggression happening today against the people of Gaza reveals the extent of their betrayal of the Palestinian cause and all Muslims.
Israel has renewed its attacks on the Gaza Strip and the West Bank in what has become the heaviest war against Palestinians over the past 7 years.
Holding up Palestinian flags, people here voice their solidarity with the Palestinian cause. They say the international community should hold Israel accountable for its war crimes and continued violation of the international law. Yad Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Turkey started a normalization phase after 3 weeks of lockdown. A 15-day-long period of eased but not lifted restrictions has started in the country as daily numbers of new infected started falling. Due to the measures taken during the holy month of Ramadan, the numbers decreased from 60,000 per day to something near 10,000. Turkish president said the country hoped to overcome this pandemic as the new waves across the world has badly affected the situation in Turkey. He also stressed the importance of taking the vaccine to overcome this phase so that Turkey could go back to normal life soon.
Normalleşme adımlarını atıyoruz.
We start implementing our normalization calendar as of Monday. The restrictions will be eased in phases until the end of May and significantly as of June.
Experts say that the gradual normalization would not result in another increase in the numbers of daily infections. They also advise citizens to minimize their home visits to relatives and friends, as well as stay away from shopping malls and crowded areas.
The number of daily infection cases has reached a logical point, paving the way for easing the lockdown. We need to ease the lockdown to make a balance between containing the spread of the virus and allowing our people to go back to work and get prepared to welcome tourists. Our economy has been negatively affected with the lockdowns over the past year. We are trying to continue with the vaccination campaign. The government is now trying to get more vaccine jabs.
Most travel restrictions will be lifted, but nighttime and weekend curfews will remain in place, and restaurants will only open for food deliveries. With the new measures, Turkey hopes to compensate the economic losses it sustained over the past year. If tourists don't return to Turkish beaches this year, the nation's current account balance and lira are likely to be hit. Rashan Saglam,